From Buck Studio and Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Here's the number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about.
Yes, obesity. It's always a hot topic. We're going to look at the genetic components of obesity, the environmental components of obesity. They both make a difference. The real question is, which counts more?
What's the other one?
E-cigarettes. FDA has tried to regulate it. The courts have said you can't regulate it. It may help people quit smoking on one hand, but it may be the gateway for cigarettes for teenagers on the other hand.
And we have a recipe?
It's wonderful. Energy Bites. I think you'll like it. It's a good way to snack in America. Who doesn't want to snack on good, healthy food?
That coming up in about 20 minutes from guest chef Dr. Sarah Fox, who will join us then. 800-462-7413. It's toll-free. But before we take our next call, Zorba, we all know that you're a big proponent of making your own meals at home. But what about making your own yogurt? Julie and Paul from La Crosse, Wisconsin, own a dairy farm where they actually take their cow's milk and make it into drinkable yogurt. And after seeing that a lot of your recipes include yogurt, she was nice enough to send in some for us to try. I think we've got some fruit flavors here, Zorba. Are you a strawberry or a mango man?
Why do I have to choose? I want to have strawberry and mango. Well, I think both of them are great.
Well, we have them here. Why don't we try them, and then you can decide which one you like
best.
That
is exactly it. And I'm looking on there. Let's see. The name of this is Sunray Farmstead Creamery. But I'm looking on here, and what's quite interesting is it says our yogurts are cream top. In other words, we don't homogenize our milk. Which makes that sort of unique. So locally made. So I'm going to try both and see.
Which are you trying first?
I'm trying the mango first.
Oh, the mango. Let me get the mango. Okay.
Oh, that's delicious. That is really good.
Okay. Now you're doing the...
Oh, strawberry. Oh, that's delicious. You mean I have to choose between strawberry and mango?
Yeah.
I'll mix them together now.
Mixing them together?
Awesome together. I'm having strawberry mango
better
here.
Together. How about without them together?
They're all great. They're all really good. But I think what's interesting about this is that when we think of yogurt, of course, we think of a container of yogurt that we have to eat. This is drinkable yogurt. So in the car in the morning, I often do not have time for breakfast. Why? Because I just don't. It's not my habit
because
at all.
Because you sleep in.
I sleep in. Thank you very much, Tom. You finally said that. I sleep in. I stay up late at night. Yeah. I'm just like a kid. I don't want to go to sleep. So in the morning, I'm always rushing out of the house.
So you do a yogurt.
No, this is a great idea. I've not had drinkable yogurt. And it's a great way to get something that is delicious in the morning. Yeah. High protein. Once again, you always have to look at calories because obesity is always an issue. So, and milk products can be a little bit, you know, have more calories. We look at this. It's 180 calories for 8 ounces. That's not too bad. Certainly as a breakfast meal, it's a great idea. I think it's wonderful.
It's a nice way to start the show.
To start the show, exactly. And this yogurt also has probiotics. Yogurt, in fact, always has probiotics as long as it has live culture. So that's what this has. This has several types of live culture. Enjoy it. It may help your immune system.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba, with a caller from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
How
can we help? My name is Mary. Well, on a previous show, you had discussed the benefits of dairy, and the statistic that was stated was that children who actually consumed milk products grew, on average, a foot taller than other children. So that was interesting to me because my son, at 18 months old, was diagnosed intolerant to dairy, which actually 1 in 65 people suffer from that intolerance.
Right, right.
He had issues when he would consume. He was chronically sick, ear infections, sinus. So I, as a parent, had to decide what, you know, choices we would make, and we had switched to almond milk. Now he can consume some dairy like yogurt, Greek style yogurts and things like that because the way that they're cultured and
That's
because
right.
of the live bacteria in them, which is very good for the system.
Mm-hmm. Right. But let me jump in for a minute about this foot taller. Let me give it some context. It's not as if we have people who consume dairy and then those who don't consume dairy and they reach different heights. It has to do with protein that's introduced into society when dairy was introduced. So, for instance, when there was more protein. When you get protein from almond milk, almonds are really a very good source of protein. And same for soy. When protein is introduced, kids tend to get taller. And it was roughly about a foot. And that's really from data of what happened after World War II in Japan, especially when all of a sudden the new generation was a foot taller than the old generation. It wasn't just milk, because Northern Europeans are more tolerant of milk and the rest of the world tends to be not as tolerant as adults. It really is protein source. So for your child, looking back, almond milk and enough protein is plenty. It doesn't have to be dairy. And you bring up a really good point.
Yeah. How old is your son?
Now my son is 6 years old.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Was that the question you had? Is he going to be short?
Well, he's doing very well. He's actually one of the tallest in class, and he's on target above actually for weight. Mm-hmm. He's a very strong, active child in sports. Tennis,
good.
Soccer,
super.
Baseball. He's actually playing flag football.
Oh, fantastic.
And
just
so,
fantastic.
So
you did a good job. What you did was, and what we do obviously in modern times in America is, if they're milk intolerant, then we substitute something else, almond, soy, another protein source, an animal source or a vegetable source, to be able to replace that protein that they don't get in milk. So your son is going to be fine. He's going to be taller than the average kid. My children
smarter than the average kid.
Smarter than the average kid. Even though when you're in Jacksonville, you're not in Lake Wobegon. That's exactly it. And here it is. I am genetically short, and I have 4 short children. I fed them lots of milk, and it didn't do any good. They never got taller. So keep up. Whatever you're doing with your son in terms of protein, you're doing the right job.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call.
You have a wonderful day.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Bye-bye. 1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'm a road cyclist. I bike a lot. And a few weeks ago, I came home from work, and I stand at work most of the time. And I sat down, and I had a bratwurst. A lump the size of a bratwurst down where I sit, and it was very painful. So obviously I can't bike and I can't sit. And it was, Doc told me he thinks there's something called ischial tuberosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, I know how I got it. I'm not sure, but I want to make sure I don't get it again. I had it about 9 years ago and they didn't diagnose it on the other side. But now I have it on this side, and it's very uncomfortable in terms of sitting and doing anything else.
How long have you been riding?
A bike, 20 years.
20 years? What do you ride?
Oh, I have a Trek. I don't know what number it is, but it's a Trek road bike, so I go out on the roads probably every day if I can.
Do you take long trips?
I do. I've done a number of centuries and a lot of 40 and 50 milers.
Oh, I used to ride to Memphis and back each year. I did a couple of them with a tent on the back. It was a lot of fun. Honda 750, I loved it.
Yeah, well, that's great. It's good exercise.
Yeah, well, maybe. I guess a regular bike without a motor. Oh, you ride a regular bike.
That's right. It's a regular bike without a motor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is a bicycle.
I get it. When I see bike, I think motorcycle.
Yes, and when I see bike, I never think motorcycle. Yeah. I mean, it just goes to shit. That's why you were so excited. You were jumping up and down.
I'm not so interested
in
anymore. Thanks for the call. All right, help him out, Zorba, anyway.
Well, the ischial tuberosities are what we sit on when we sit down. In other words, when we sit down, well, obviously we sit on our derriere.
Yeah.
We sit on our rump. We've got padding. We've got fat over there. We've got ligaments. We've got tendons and stuff. But basically, from the pelvic point of view, The ischial tuberosities are little bony prominences that you can push on in the bottom of your butt.
Yeah.
If, Tom, if you take your hand and you push on it on your butt,
yeah,
you can find it.
Yeah, it goes back and forth.
Yeah, it kind of goes back and
yeah,
forth.
Yeah.
And what happens is when you're on a bike, that's the part that's, you know, I mean, how can you be on a bike with those teeny little tiny seats? And that's because it's the ischial tuberosities that you're really on. And yours got inflamed. You know, the basically the tissue around it got inflamed. And it's a problem. What kind of a seat do you have?
Well, I think that was my mistake. I have two bikes. One I ride outside that has a very nice seat. And then
nice
when the weather...
What? Nice means
oh,
what?
It's more aerodynamic. It's thinner, but it also has padding. Mm-hmm. And then the one I wear, use on the inside, is a very old seat that's much harder. And I think because my schedule got busy, I ended up being on the inside one too much.
Yeah, schedule. What sort of work do you do? You said you stand up all the time.
Well, I'm a school administrator, so I don't sit much, especially in the summertime. Uh-huh. And between that and gardening in the summertime, I kind of squeeze biking in when I can.
Well, the issue is bumping up and down on those ischial tuberosities. That's really the issue that's involved. So padded seat, very, very important. And then while you're recovering from it, sitting in a chair and make sure that you don't go on your ischial tuberosities. And I recommend you get a donut. And a donut looks like a donut. It basically looks like almost a life raft. Mm-hmm. It's a little circular thing, and we give it to people with hemorrhoids so it's more comfortable for them on their butt, and that might help you because you don't want to sit on those tuberosities because you're going to continue to have pain till you get better. And change that seat. Go out and spend that money and change that seat.
Yeah, it's supposed to come in today, so hopefully I will.
There we go.
All right.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure. 800-462-7413. It's toll-free. 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, talk about obesity and what do we blame, genes or the environment?
Well, it's a fascinating study. It came out of the University of Exeter, and we're looking at genetic factors, and we know they're factors. You know, twin and adoption studies where kids are raised in two different families or affected in two different ways. One might be with the dad, one might be with the mom, or they're just separated at birth and they go in two families, shows that there's a 70% component. That's the estimation. In other words, if one twin is fat and they don't meet each other for 20 years, there's a 70% chance the other twin will also be fat and overweight. But this study looked at a huge number of people, 200,000 people.
Whoa.
And they looked at a gene variant, which is called the FTO, F as in Frank, T as in Tom, O as in out, the FTO gene, looking that if you have a couple of copies of this gene, it appears that you're more likely to be overweight. And the answer is yes. That it probably is responsible for 70% of the obesity. But here's the interesting thing about the study, that those who are physically active as children appear not to be obese despite the fact that they have the gene.
You can overcome the gene.
Correct, as children. Mm-hmm. In other words, part of the obesity epidemic that we're looking at right now is that our children don't just sit in front of the TV. They sit in front of the TV. They play video games. They're on the computer. They're doing Facebook. They're sitting on their ischial tuberosities, and they're not doing anything at all. They're not even biking to try to get anything out of it. And that's what this study really shows, that the major aspect here, the gene you can't change. You can't change your parents and your genes, but you can change how they express themselves.
Yeah, well— obviously, activity has a lot to do with it because we didn't used to be as heavy as we are now, and the genes don't change from generation
to generation. Correct. There are two aspects when we look at obesity. We have calories in and we have exercise. Now, it's not as if they're sort of in one pot. They're two separate issues. So we know that exercise is important, but among other things, people who exercise tend to eat fewer calories. In other words, exercise attenuates and decreases appetite. Mm-hmm. And so part of the issue is not you're not just burning the calories, but you never get the calories into the body in the first place.
Even though genes are very, very important, we can't really blame it on the genes.
We cannot blame it on the genes. And like you said, society has gotten bigger and the genes have not changed in society in the last 20 years. However, if you have children at home, you can limit the amount of time they're on the screen, mm-hmm. computer screen, game screen, TV screen, and you can say, get outside and play. And even in the wintertime, you can have them dress up and get outside and play. And I think that's the take-home issue.
We have callers waiting, but we have an open line for you if you'd like to join us. 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now back to the phone, Zorba, and a listener in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
the show.
Thanks. How can we help?
Well, I had a friend who told me about a case study that they did with mice back in the last year or so. And they said in this study that if these mice were given a steady diet of animal protein, like I think they specifically mentioned casein, that they were more likely to develop cancer in their colon. And I'm just kind of wondering how much into play, like how much should I take that into account when I'm thinking of what I should eat?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, first of all, it's a mouse study, so it gives us some idea about human health. We know that diet affects cancer, especially in the whole digestive tract. And we know that, for instance, because cancer of the esophagus is much more common in Scandinavia, Finland, Norway, Denmark, Sweden. And we believe that part of that is due to – there's some issues of how they make their coffee, which is boiling the coffee. We think that's a factor. We think eating meats, sausages of various sorts that have nitrates and nitrites, we think that also is a major factor in that. Once again, but we know that diet probably plays a role. Colon cancer, very, very interesting. There's not much colon cancer in Japan, in Japanese. They don't have a lot of colon cancer. They have more stomach cancer. When Japanese moved to Hawaii over a 20-year period, they're more likely to have colon cancer and less likely to have stomach cancer. Huh. And the only difference – well, there may be a difference in the climate, but the only difference basically is once they take up an American diet in Hawaii, the colon cancer begins to develop. I don't think it's casein-specific, which is a dairy product. I think it's that we've seen lots of data that show a high roughage diet tends to be a diet that's better and is cancer preventive. And a typical American diet, meat and potatoes with a small amount of poop that goes out the butt, basically, is probably bad for the body. So I think it fits within there. Do you eat a lot of dairy products?
Recently, I've been trying to cut back just because I'm pretty sure that it's just healthier not to eat as much dairy for various reasons. But I think it's more of like replacing those things with, like you said, more of like a roughage diet.
Exactly. And I think dairy is good. I think it has a calcium in it. I think that's very, very useful. There are other products that are made of soy and almond, which I think are equally there. But, you know, like anything else you want to look at, dairy is high fat. Unless if it's low fat, you make it a low-fat dairy product. But it still has a fair amount of calories. So you have to look at it that way. It's not a neutral drink or something that's neutral in terms of your diet. But it's something that's worthwhile. But getting back to the casein issue, which is dairy derived. I don't think that's specifically it. I think roughage, though, is the answer. So good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you. We have kind of a dairy theme running
through.
We do. Before we take a short break now, Zorba, let's read a listener tip from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This helpful hint comes to us from Scott in Jacksonville, Florida. He writes, as far back as I can remember, I've always had colds and the flu 2 to 3 times per year. Several years ago, my dentist informed me that I needed to step up my oral hygiene. So the very next day, I started my new routine of flossing, rinsing with mouthwash, brushing each morning. And now not only are my gums healthy, but I haven't had any sicknesses since. I preach my story to everyone who's willing to listen in hopes that they too can have the same results.
Well, taking care of your mouth so that you can keep your teeth and your gums is really, really important. And obviously, it's important for good health throughout the lifespan of our lives and making sure that we feel good. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really cuts down on upper respiratory infections. I'd put out a challenge for that. Show me the data. Show me the money. On the other hand, I do know that good dental hygiene makes your gums and teeth better, and go for it.
Have a lifestyle tip you'd like to share? Be sure to not brush it off. Send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a special guest recipe coming up from a guest chef. Lots more of your calls, some interesting research to talk over, and of course our medical myth buster. Lots of good reasons for you to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But as you know, before our next call, this is recipe time, so let's get to it. Welcoming a very special guest chef this time. A guest chef, Zorba, means I can go out and get a beer while you and she talk things over. Let's welcome Dr. Sarah Fox, author of Super Snacks for Super Kids. Dr. Fox, hi.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
Hi. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, the book is a cookbook filled with healthy snack recipes for kids. Mm-hmm. It was made all here in Mineral Point. I made it with another mom locally here, and we're really excited about releasing the book to the public. Mm-hmm. The most exciting part about it is that all of the proceeds from the book will go right back to our school wellness fund, mm-hmm. so we'll be able to do some exciting projects with that money.
Oh, that's great. So you said another mom. That means you yourself are a mom.
That's right. I have three kids. Uh-huh. They're 8, 5, and 3, and they all love all the snacks in the book, and we tested them on all of our kids, so we know that they're kid-friendly.
So what motivated you to do this?
Well, we try to instill in our own children healthy eating habits and a healthy relationship with food. And I know most parents want the same things for their children, but they might be too busy or might be overwhelmed mm-hmm. by conflicting messages about what foods might be healthy. So we wanted this book to be a resource for those parents to know that their kids can eat healthy snacks and to be nourished by those foods and have the energy for all their activities during the day.
So you guys are starting a trend here, medical doctors who are cooks.
That's right.
It sounds great. Well, let's look at this. This is Energy Bites.
So, Energy Bites, that's right.
So how'd you come up with this?
We actually borrowed this recipe from a friend of ours here in town, and she uses this for her kids. And we wanted something that was really simple, something that parents could make pretty quickly. I even made it this Monday night. I happened to be on call, but my 8-year-old needed a recipe for her snack on Tuesday. So I made this on Monday night, even though I was on call. It took me about 15 minutes, and we had a great healthy snack for the kids on Tuesday.
Sounds perfect. So let's go through it. We start out with 1 cup of old-fashioned oats. Now, why old-fashioned oats?
Well, we've gotten a couple of questions about that from other parents wondering why old-fashioned oats versus the
newfangled
quick
oats.
and the old-fashioned oats are the whole oats, and they're actually broken down a little bit more slowly in the stomach, so they're a little healthier for the kids.
They're not that hard to use. And that instant oat thing isn't that much of an easier thing than the old-fashioned.
That's right. And the quick-cut oats are just old-fashioned oats that are cut into smaller pieces, so they absorb a little bit more water, and so it makes kind of for a flakier product. So we find that the old-fashioned oats works a little bit better.
Interesting how we look at how things are processed. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's old-fashioned oats, there's new oats, and we don't think about that with other grains. You know, a lot of other grains, you don't think about... Right, well, actually, we do with rice. There's medium rice, there's long grain rice. So we start out with a cup of old-fashioned oats, a cup of toasted coconut flakes. Now, do kids like coconut?
Many do, and actually this is so, when it's mixed with the other ingredients, kids don't really notice it all that much. Now, the other day I didn't have any coconut flakes, so I actually substituted some dried fruit in there.
What sort of dried fruit?
I did just raisins, because that's what I had in the cupboard. Mm-hmm. But the coconut flakes add some good healthy fats into mm-hmm. there and also add some good flavor in there.
Okay, so you could add coconut flakes if you don't have it, raisins, because a lot of us, Tom has raisins in his cupboard, right?
That's right.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, Tom, you do?
Yeah.
You do have raisins?
Yeah.
I'm going to come.
Why is that a surprise?
I'm totally surprised.
That I would eat a raisin?
I'm totally surprised. I did not expect you to have raisins. I'm going to have to come over to your house and make sure you have raisins in your cupboard. I'm going to come over with a flashlight and see whether or not I'm totally.
Anytime. Surprise
I'm
inspection.
Doing a surprise visit on your house. I'm going to knock on the door. Knock, knock, knock. I am the raisin inspector. I want to see the raisins in your cupboard. A half a cup of chocolate chips.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. What kind?
Well, I use just plain chocolate chips. You could use semi-sweet or mm-hmm. the dark chocolate chips would be really delicious in the recipe.
So chocolate. How about the brown sugar chocolate chips?
You could use I haven't seen those.
Yeah, they're brown sugar chocolate chips. Okay, 1/2 cup of peanut butter. What kind of peanut butter do you use?
I use the natural peanut mm-hmm. butter that you have to stir up. Mm-hmm. And that
the natural peanut butters, there's some that are on the shelf now that have sugar added to them, mm-hmm. and that probably would make this a little too sweet. So just the regular natural peanut butter would
so
be perfect.
So I think that's important to look at when you're doing this recipe is it's a natural peanut butter without sugar.
That's right.
Because regular peanut butter has sugar in it.
That's right.
You know, for the most part. A 1/2 cup of flax meal.
Correct.
1/3 cup of honey,
mm-hmm.
and 1 teaspoon of vanilla.
That's right.
So simple to do in a medium bowl. Stir together all the ingredients until well mixed. Chill for 30 minutes. Roll the dough into 24 one-inch balls. Do you actually roll the dough or do you just take it off and sort of make little balls?
I take a little chunk and then kind of roll it in my hand.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do after washing my hands thoroughly. And
that's
making
right.
sure. Of course. Well, we have to tell our listeners they always have to wash their hands before they touch food, right?
Yes.
It's important. Store in an airtight container in the refrigerator because you don't want it to dry out. Take it out the next day and enjoy. I've got a question. I like this recipe. Is this only for children?
Absolutely
I mean, I
not.
Can't eat this?
I had mine with coffee this morning. It was perfect.
I think this is great. I love the recipe, too. One serving, we had 12 servings from this. That's basically two of the energy bites. It's 238 calories. So it's about 110, 120 calories in energy bite. I think this is great. Kids love it. It's got some fat in it. It's got some potassium in it, too. I think it's a wonderful recipe. A little bit of protein, 12% of your minimum daily requirement, actually, with two of these. And the protein is mostly coming from the peanut butter.
And a lot of good fiber as well.
And fiber. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listeners are going to want to get a copy of this.
Thank you. And if they want to buy a copy, they can go to our website online, which is www.superkidsbook.com.
That's right. And we'll have it on our website, too.
Yeah.
So
wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for joining us. And to get a copy of today's recipe or to find out more about Dr. Sarah Fox's book, Super Snacks for Super Kids and where to get it, visit our website at
ZorvaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can search for all of your favorite recipes. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
one 800 462 7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, back to the phones and a listener with us in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Doc. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I just discovered your show, and now it's made me feel like maybe I need to take a little bit more responsibility.
Oh, hey, we've done some good.
We've done good, yes.
I had a heart attack in my early 40s. I'm 51 years old now. And my doctor actually convinced me that he could do more with meds than I could with a whole bunch of lifestyle changes. So I pretty much take a pill for my cholesterol, Lipitor, and I take metoprolol for my blood pressure. And have put it out of my mind. But now after listening to you guys, I'm thinking there's probably more I can be doing.
Mm. Well, the answer is yes, you can. First of all, you're taking aspirin too or no aspirin?
I should be, but I'm not.
Uh-huh. And your reason that you're not taking aspirin, I'm sorry? What was the reason?
I'm lazy.
Lazy. Lazy and slothful.
I thought it cost too much. Well, they got about $1,000 for $3 or something.
It is the cheapest thing. I think the plastic containers cost more than the aspirin inside the plastic containers. Got to be on an aspirin a day, too. So you definitely have to go and purchase one. Some very interesting studies. Numerous studies have shown the medical treatment of heart disease is dynamite. Getting your blood pressure under good control. If you've had a heart attack, a beta blocker is definitely the way to do it. Beta blockers, even if you don't have a heart attack, prevent a recurrent heart attack. And cholesterol meds, getting your cholesterol down. Hard to get it down that far without going on the cardboard diet. And even if you do, the meds do other things. They stabilize the plaques. Mm-hmm. They keep the plaques from rupturing, which is what happens when you sort of get a clog in those coronary arteries. But the answer is yes. Besides aspirin, cholesterol, and a beta blocker, what are you doing for your lifestyle? What exercise do you get?
Well, I have a goal of walking 30 minutes a day every day, and uh-huh. I'm successful about 4 days a week.
Well, that's good. Successful 4 days a week. If we do the math, that's 120 minutes. And basically, that is the recommendation. The recommendation is 120 minutes of good activity every week. And the what percentage of Americans, if you think about, actually get that, it unfortunately drops to about 25, maybe 30% at most. Mm. So you do that. How's your diet? How's your weight?
My weight, I'm at 195 now.
Uh-huh.
I'm down from about 225
Good.
About 9 months ago, and I believe my target should be about 180.
Uh-huh. How'd you get there? How'd you get from 225 to 195?
Just portion size, you know, cutting out snacks, eating just a reasonable amount of food at my meals.
Excellent. I read an article recently in the New York Times Sunday edition, fascinating article of these two inventors who came up with the concept, what is the portion that we should eat, and they have measuring cups. It's a great idea. So, and one measuring cup says meat, one measuring cup says fish, one measuring cup says carbohydrate, and salad has no measuring cup at all. So, and but it has even an oil cup for how much salad dressing, so you don't have to think. How do you like it? You're smiling about this.
Well, you can't stick a steak in a measuring cup.
Well, but you can look at the size. Well, yes, you can't stick a steak in a measuring cup. It kind of gives you a visual look. You know, that's exactly right. You can't stick a steak. But anyway, getting back to the issue at hand, which is not, Tom, you're always looking at the dark side of things, Tom. You have to look at the bright side of things. But portion size, you bring up a really good point. Portion size rocks. It really makes a difference. It is a huge difference. So congrats on that weight. So that's the other thing. It's exercise, it's diet, and then it's the things that you do. But what people, many people fail to do is they say, especially if they've had a heart attack at your age, is they say, I can do this without medication. The answer is yes, you could do it without medication if you were strict. There's no doubt about it. How many and medications help an entire population, but we can't say it'll help you as an individual. So they might be correct. Some people are helped and some are not. But why not get the best that technology has to offer? And we've dropped the rate of heart attacks. We're keeping people alive much, much longer than we did when I started medical school. And it's because of statins and blood pressure pills and aspirin. So did you have a family history of this?
Yeah, actually I do. My dad had several heart surgeries and a couple of pacemakers. His only brother had heart problems. His mother had heart problems. So I know that that's something I'm going to be with for the rest of my life.
Right. But if you start on medications early, you may not need the same stuff that your dad has. And what kind of work do you do?
I'm an electrical engineer.
Okay. So is that stressful or not stressful?
I've learned to make it less stressful.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. That's the other part. Yeah. My son is in engineering at MIT, and I think he embodies stress at times. So so thank you. Thank you very much for your call.
Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413.
It's so wonderful when people call up and they say, hey, I just discovered your show. I've got a question.
Yeah.
We love that. Love it.
Yeah. Back to the phones now and a listener in Lannan, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I injured my hand, my little baby finger on my right hand, and I broke it. It was swelled up, the whole hand. You couldn't see the knuckles or anything, and I was kind of black and blue up to my elbow playing pickleball.
Playing what?
What?
Pickleball.
What's that?
Well, it's kind of a variation of tennis. You take and mark off the tennis court smaller. It's played with a paddle very similar to a ping pong paddle, that same consistency, only a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's played with a wiffle ball.
Oh, with a wiffle ball. So it's called pickleball.
Mm-hmm. They teach it to some kids in school, I've learned. I've just learned about the sport myself. Played it 3-4 times and then injured my hand. Anyway, my doctor looked at it, said, well, it's too swollen, x-ray. We waited 2 weeks, and it looked like the break was between the hand knuckle and the first joint. So that's all healed up now, it seems. But my finger is all bent up.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple of things that are involved. First of all, you've had an x-ray. This obviously you had an injury. Your finger can be bent up afterwards because of if you're splinted. Were you splinted for any period of time?
He just simply said tether it to the next finger with a little piece of tape or a Band-Aid, which I did. And now that's all done, and it looks really quite grotesque to me.
So what you need, there's first thing I would recommend, especially if the x-ray looks good, is you need to go to physical therapy and do range of motion activities. And PTs will give you a bunch of things to do to be able to hold things in your hand that will actually help you and help your hand squeeze and things of that nature. That's really what you need to do.
And I have been squeezing a ball. Mm-hmm. Actually, I went to the physical therapist the other day, and he said that the tip of my finger has no, I can't push it up. It's like floppy.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of a doctor have you gone to for this particular injury? Your family doctor?
Well, I went to my MD, mm-hmm. and then? My regular MD, mm-hmm. and then he did all the x-ray and everything. And then they basically told me, well, you can live with that. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no. Uh-huh.
And where did you go after that?
Then I went to a sports therapist, and then he sends me now to a hand specialist. Right.
Good. Have you gone to the hand specialist?
I have an appointment.
That's the real issue. The issue then is if physical therapy hasn't worked, if movement hasn't worked, you've got to go to somebody such as a hand specialist. Mm. That's important for you to do. My recommendation for this are anti-inflammatories for pain or swelling, physical therapy, and working on it. That's really critical.
Is it possible that the hand can be restored?
I wouldn't, without looking at the x-ray, without that, I couldn't tell you. But a hand specialist will be able to tell you. Sometimes breaks are there that we have abnormalities, and quite often we can work through them or they can be worked on. But.
Is your goal to get back to that pickle thing game?
Oh, I already have played. I can squeeze it. Mm-hmm. I just have no control over the very tip, mm-hmm. which causes more of a problem when I'm cleaning or doing everyday chores.
Right. So very important.
Thank
go
you.
To your go to the hand doctor, and good luck to you. And
thank
enjoy
you
your
so
your pickleball.
Yeah.
I will. I love your program. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413. Zorba, before we take another short break, let's get through another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's email comes to us from Mark in Cornucopia, Wisconsin, who disagrees with your casual view of the dangers of Teflon. He writes, I really respect your conservative approach to practicing medicine. However, I would be more careful about having Teflon on the cookware you're eating from. Metabolites from Teflon are actually in the bloodstream of most of our citizens. Did you know that just like the proverbial coal mine canaries, domesticated birds can instantly die if Teflon pans become overheated? That's good enough for me. I now cook on cast iron and find it incredibly easy to clean.
Well, first of all, I have, full disclosure, I own no stock in DuPont, which invented Teflon at all.
Also, you cook with cast iron.
I cook with cast iron all the time, but I don't cook my eggs on cast iron because they get stuck, unless you use a lot of oil, which I tend not to do, so I use Teflon. There are a number of people who don't like Teflon, and I think those people should not use Teflon. I think that's it. And yes, these plastic particles in some fashion have been found in the bloodstream. What that means, I don't think we really know. Teflon has been around for 25 or 30 years, and it's never been linked with anything other than bad rep, and people don't like it. But people like to use it. I mean, that's why it's manufactured. People like to use it. They think that it's a neutral particle. So I don't think the jury is really – I guess you could say the jury is out on this in that we don't know 100% for sure. But I think it's important for people who want to cook in a more natural way not to have Teflon because they would prefer that. And I think it's the canary in the mine and the birds who get killed because a Teflon pan is overheated. I don't know exactly about that. It's not a study I ever looked at, so I'm not going to comment on it. I think if Teflon had a lot of major side effects, we ought to have seen it by now. It's been around for 30, 40 years, maybe 50 years. It's been around for a long, long time. But generally, a lot of people who are against Teflon are also against plastic now and plastic containers. Once again, there's some minimal data, but there's no cause and effect that's ever been shown.
So your bottom line is you still think it's safe.
I'm still going to use Teflon for my eggs, but I use cast iron to cook everything else because I like the feel of the pan.
If you think Zorba's advice is cooked, send your rebuttals along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research to talk about. More of your calls, our medical myth buster, too. Glad to have you with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, we talk once again about e-cigarettes.
Right. So for those of you who don't know what e-cigarettes are, and frankly, a lot of people don't know what they are, you hear about them. Basically, it is a battery-powered device, looks like a cigarette, and what it does is it vaporizes a liquid. Now, what's in the liquid? Often there's sweet-smelling things in the breath that you put in, and they're often laced with nicotine. Nicotine, we know, is a highly addictive substance.
Right.
So you take some e-cigarettes, you may be hooked on nicotine. The feds, just to give you a little background, have tried to regulate this, and they said, this is nicotine, this is a drug delivery device, because there are nicotine inhalers that you can get with a prescription. Yeah. The judge in the case threw it out. And they said, you can't regulate this. You actually don't have it under the law. And right now there's a fight about e-cigarettes concerning
that. We've talked about this before, and you're always very critical of e-cigarettes.
Absolutely. So let's look at the downside and the upside. The downside is that this may be the gateway for cigarettes for teenagers. In other words, because there's no regulation there. You can buy this stuff when you're 12 years old or 13 years old. And we got rid of candy cigarettes. How can we allow e-cigarettes to be purchased by our children? And it may be bad.
I'm a little upset. Skeptical about this gateway to argument.
Well, you may be skeptical, but what is the gateway? Since we've started to work on teenagers and trying to get them to quit smoking, never start, never stop. It's been very useful, and there's been a drop
like
in teen
marijuana
smoking.
Marijuana is the gateway to
No. I don't think it's. I don't think we're in the same issue with marijuana. I think we're in mimicry issue that actually gets you hooked on a drug. And tobacco is far more addicted than marijuana. Yeah. A lot of people smoke marijuana and they're not addicted. Okay. Different issue.
So there's another side.
Well, the other side is that e-cigarettes may actually help people quit who want to quit. If you look at nicotine inhalers, which are manufactured, they're very expensive. They're by prescription. This is a nicotine inhaler. And so there's been a study, not a long-term study, that have shown that it's as useful as the patch and useful as the gum. So people want to quit. Maybe they should be able to allow them
this
to have
is
e-cigarettes.
So interesting. E-cigarettes could lead you to smoking real cigarettes.
Right.
Or they could help you get away from smoking real cigarettes.
Right. What could be more controversial than this? What can be more controversial? So the issues have been, well, we ought to do studies now and see whether or not people really quit with it. On the other hand, the feds have not wanted to actually, if you will, put money behind that because they're afraid of the dark side of e-cigarettes, that this may be a gateway drug for getting people. So the result right now is a mess. I think if you want to quit and an e-cigarette may be useful for you, by all means use it. But I think the Fed should be able to regulate e-cigarettes because I still think it's a gateway drug for teenagers and young adults to start smoking.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, we welcome a caller now in Lombard, Illinois. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Hi, how are you doing? That's Joey from Lombard. Mm-hmm. What happens to me during sleep hours? Sometimes, not usually any specific time of the night, once in a while when I'm napping, is that I fall into this state of in-between sleep where I can't wake. I'm kind of aware of what's going on, but I can't wake myself up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can call out to whomever's in the room or whoever I think is in the room, but I cannot wake myself
this
up.
This is really interesting. You're conscious at this time, right?
Yes, yes.
Conscious?
I believe so. I mean, I can see the room sometimes. I'm aware. I've thought that there has been someone there when there hasn't, so it kind of leads me to believe, well, maybe I'm just seeing what my mind thinks is the room at the moment.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I want to ask a few other questions. First of all,
Okay. Is
this drug-induced? Is it after you've had alcohol, you've noticed, or gotten stoned on pot or anything of that nature?
No, not at all. I mean, it's happened off and on throughout the years.
Okay.
I mean, it kind of runs in...
How many years has it gone on for?
Well, I'm 42, so I would say 20 years at
20
least, 25
have,
years.
Have you talked about it to your mom and dad? Do they have it?
I've mentioned it throughout the years, and I've heard that people have done the same.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious as to what, because it can happen. I mean, it takes every ounce of effort
to wake up.
Just to move an arm.
Right, just move an arm. Right. No, because you're actually in that deep consciousness. And the reason why I asked your mom and dad is often this runs in families. Quite often your mom may have it, or there may be an aunt or a grandmother. Is it disturbing to you?
Yeah, I mean, in the moment, it's a scary thing to think, well, maybe, you know, because once in a while, I come out of it, and then I'm like, okay, and within, like, 20 seconds, I'm right back at that state again, right. And I'm just – it's a panic mode.
Right. So. No, it's a scary – it's usually a frightening or a scary dreamlike state. You are immobile, like you said, because you can't move. You're asleep. You can't move anything, and it takes all of your energy just to open up your eyes to get out of that particular spot.
Yeah.
And it, as I said, we actually have a name for it. Now, often this particular type of sleep pattern is something that can be altered with a medication, but you'd have to take the medication every night. You know, if
right.
it, you know, and if it happens on an occasional basis, it's not something usually that people want to do. But sometimes when people have it, they'll take a medication. There's either a common sleeping pill such as Ambien would not be recommended because
right.
often that can actually induce that state. It's a similar state to sleepwalking.
Right. I'm not a big fan of, like, the sleep aids or
right.
that whole
right.
just doesn't work
right.
for me.
No. And there's a drug called trazodone, I just want to mention it, called which is an antidepressant side effect of sleepiness. That can affect this if people get disturbed by it. Or a drug called gabapentin, which is another drug that we use for chronic pain that can also work. Short of that, there's not a lot that you can do. In other words, this is your natural sleep pattern. And you can some people can actually train themselves within that when they're in that reverie to not be disturbed by it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd think sooner or later, when you're in this, you're going to say, wait a minute, this is the same thing that I've done 100 times. Why would I be scared of it now?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. I've tried. I mean, I've actually had it happen and laid there and thought, okay, I'm here. Mm-hmm. But I saw, like, at the bottom of the bed, like, this black cloud start to move across. Mm-hmm.
Well,
like,
that's the dreamlike state. But I know what you're talking about because I've had this experience several times. I've only had it about once or twice a decade. I haven't had it now in years. And I know precisely what you're talking about, where you know where you are. I've had the experience. And then there's something bad that's happening within the vision that is frightening, because you don't have control over the movement of your muscle. That's what it is.
Right.
All you have to do, as you know, is move your pinky finger and you can be out of there. I would concentrate on the smallest muscle that you could move, which would be your eye. And then if your eye opens up and you're awake, the answer to get out of there is to sit up in bed, not to go back to sleep. Because you've got to shake yourself out. Otherwise, you'll go right back to that. And that's what you're going to do if it's an occasional basis. But you might want to have something on hand if it occurs more than one night, you know, if it occurs several nights in a row. But
sure.
Good luck to you. And on our website, zorbapastor.org, we're going to put a couple of references to this. Because I'll do some research on this and we'll host it up on the website.
Excellent. Love your show.
Thanks.
Thank you for loving the show.
Thanks
Appreciate
a lot
it.
For the call.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
800-462-7413. And Zorba time now for our medical myth buster. David in La Crosse, Wisconsin, recently heard that warm water is no better for washing your hands than cold water. Now he wants to know what you think.
Well, the answer is he's right. Warm water is not any better than cold water. It's a myth that warm water counts. It's not a myth that we should wash our hands. And basically, I pulled a study, and the study looked at people who washed their hands, went to the washroom and washed their hands for 25 seconds.
Okay.
How long does it take you when you go to wash
your
hands?
I've never timed it.
Not 25 seconds. That's a long time. Think about it. How long do you wash your hands under the water?
Well, you're a doctor, and you wash your hands about 40 times a day, so you do it quick. You know how to do it.
That's right.
I think I spend at least that much time.
You think you spend 25 seconds every time? How often do you wash your hands throughout the day?
Not that often.
Well, that's exactly it.
They get really dirty.
Not that often. They're dirty, right. If I had all the grime that you had on your hands, I'd spend 25 or 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But they found no difference in people who wash with warm water versus cold water. Mm-hmm. Now, washing your hands with warm water is going to reduce the oil content of your hands a little bit more because the bacteria tend to sort of be underneath there, the bad bacteria. But basically, it's just getting out, folks, and washing your hands. And the soapless, you know, the things that you use that are alcohol-based are dynamite. They're actually, in some studies, better than soap and water. They're equally, certainly
you
as good.
You say it doesn't make any difference, warm or cold. And then you go on to talk about how much better it is to have warm
and cold. Well, it feels better. Do you like to wash your hands
in cold
water?
I don't believe this for a second. I would. It's much better to use warm water.
You believe that? No, but this, it doesn't show it's much. You mean you're going with what your mom
said? You talked
about
a little bacteria or something.
Well, yeah, but there's no credible evidence that warm water is better than cold water. It just feels better. It reminds you of your mother. That's what it is.
In a good way.
In a good way. In a good way. You got it. In a good way.
Do you have a myth you'd need Zorba to wash away? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Well, Zorba, before we go, let's share a handy listener trick from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health voicemail box. This helpful hint comes to us from Robert in Phoenix, Arizona, who has some surprisingly tasty advice for those listening with acid reflux. He says that he, too, once suffered from some serious stomach discomfort, that is, until he found a sweeter solution. Robert recommends a couple of tablespoons of maple syrup to neutralize the acid instantly, and he swears that it works even faster than the medications.
Very, very interesting. Well, acid reflux is open to a variety of different ways to treat it. If maple syrup works for you, try it. It's a very interesting folk remedy. Got to be careful how much maple syrup you eat, but a couple of teaspoons, not much in terms of calories.
Excellent. Are you in a sticky situation, or maybe you just have some advice for those of us who are? Just send your comments along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. The show was produced by Todd Witter with help from Gabrielle Pedriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0921Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.